I wanted to talk a little bit this evening, continue talking a little bit about the subject of fullness and emptiness. And the reason why I've been thinking about this a little bit was because I was talking with a friend of mine who's a Catholic, and she was saying that she'd just done a Buddhist mindfulness course, as it happened, in this place. And somebody from Melbourne or somebody had taught a mindfulness course, and she was saying she'd come along and did it. And she said that one thing that she found it hard to deal with was, she said, was the nihilism. She said she found Buddhism very nihilistic, and because there's no God and stuff. I'm not quite sure why she had that response, whether that was just her or whether it was something in the way that that it was a particular thing was presented or something. I'm not quite sure, but we had a bit of a talk about that, and when she said that, I was a bit kind of taken aback or a bit kind of lost for words. I didn't quite know how to respond, so that's why I've been thinking about it a little bit more. And I think one of the problems is that when you look at things from a more conventional religious point of view, like Christianity or other kind of religions apart from Buddhism, is that they tend to come to things from belief. Yeah, so this sort of set of beliefs come first. So you believe in God, or you believe in Jesus, or you believe in Allah, or something like that, and of course, it's true that people in those religions will say that, in a sense, they have an experience of their deity or their religion. So there's an extremely experiential dimension to it. But I'm never quite sure exactly what that is. You know, people will say to me that they have an experience of God, or they feel the presence of Jesus, or something like that. But I never really understand what they mean by that. Yeah. Because obviously there's something there. Obviously they're describing some experience, but because the description of that experience is so caught up with their own belief system and their own metaphysics, it's hard for me to work out actually what is the experience about. And if you compare that with the way that the Buddha talked about meditation states, you know, he would say, well, there's vitaka, vichara, there's these different mental factors, mind's applied and it stays with the object, there's a feeling of rapture, there's a feeling of bliss, there's a feeling of oneness, or there's the absence of those things, there's the five hindrances or whatever. And so they're things that you can really get a grasp on. Is my mind one-pointed or is it not? You know, if you look in the Satipatthana Sutta, mind with lust and mind without lust, mind without hatred, and we can all recognize those things. It's all pretty straightforward, actually, the psychology of it. So when we talk with each other about Buddhist meditation, we're always coming back to the experience. Yeah, it's all based on that experience of things. But from a theistic point of view, it sort of starts with belief, and then sort of experience is filtered through those beliefs, meaning that to me it's very unclear what's actually being spoken about. And that's not, I'm not meaning that. I'm just meaning to say, perhaps within that community that it's easier to communicate. Perhaps if people share that their beliefs, then they'll know what each other's talking about. But even then, I'm a little bit doubtful, because even in Buddhism, it's quite hard to know what somebody else's meditation experience is. Even if you're talking about it in the most straightforward way you can, it's still hard to actually know what somebody else's experience is. And so, you know, if two people say, yes, I had a feeling of the experience of the presence of Jesus, what are they actually experiencing and how does that compare with each other? I have no idea. So coming from this point of view of kind of belief, then in a way you see Buddhism as being an absence of those beliefs. So Buddhism is a probably best described as a non-theistic religion, and it's certainly not How exactly to define Buddhism is a little bit problematic. You could say it's atheistic, but the problem is that atheism is usually a kind of a defines itself by the rejection of a belief in God. Yeah, whereas Buddhism doesn't really define itself by a rejection of the belief in God. It actually defines itself by its acceptance of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path and the Dependent Origination and all of these kinds of things. So if we're going to define Buddhism in terms of belief, then we define it in terms of the actual principles and practices of Buddhism. So of course there's no room in Buddhism for this conception of a creator God in the sense that's believed or accepted within theistic religions. So there's no idea of a creator God who was the sort of first cause and creator of the universe, who's all-powerful and all-knowing and morally perfect and so on, which are the usual qualities which are attributed to a monotheistic deity. So, of course, Buddhism is quite happy to accept lots of things. This is another reason why it's a bit dubious whether you say Buddhism is an atheistic religion, because atheism is usually associated with a kind of a sort of materialism and a complete skepticism about the existence of anything other than this kind of straightforward lumpy matter stuff, which we bump into when we walk around on the surface of this planet. Of course, Buddhism's quite happy to talk about other dimensions of being, other planes of being, other heavens and hells and all of these different kinds of realms. And while it's not too clear from the way that the Buddhist texts talk about these things, it's not too clear in what sense that they exist, or what kinds of things that they really are and how those things actually relate to the physical world, which is more apparent to our senses. But nevertheless, in some sense, those things are felt to exist. So there's not, Buddhism doesn't have a skeptical, agenda in that way. We're not out to prove that these things don't exist, but what Buddhism shows is, well, these things are not necessarily that important. They're not essential for our religious path. So we are quite happy to believe in the existence of powerful beings of one form or another who may have a lot of love, and they may be very powerful and very beautiful, and they may, I don't know, go around walking on water or doing various other kinds of things which gods are supposed to do. But they're not eternal, they're not perfect, they're not all wise. And of course in the Buddhist scriptures those kinds of gods are always depicted as coming to the Buddha for teaching rather than the other way around. So if we look at our belief system and our world from a theistic point of view, in a sense we have kind of a lump of stuff which we call a universe. And part of that lump of stuff is this kind of squishy form of matter that we call humanity, which sort of scurries around on the surface of an Earth, of a planet, doing stuff. And none of which is particularly meaningful, except in the sense that it's within this greater context of an all-knowing and all-loving God, who has endowed us, and perhaps other species as well, but certainly has endowed us with a soul or a spirit or with something special which gives our life meaning, which gives our life purpose, which makes us valuable, yeah? Which means that we somehow are special because we're not just stuff, yeah? We're actually something which has an inherent dignity and inherent value, and that inherent value stems from, in some way, from God through the creative act. So of course if you look at it from that point of view and then you take away God and you take away the soul, yeah, you're taking away all of those things which gave the world meaning, right? From that point of view, the world now seems empty, yeah, you know, like when Adam is lying there and he's just a kind of thing of mud and clay. Yeah, he's just a clay doll, right? And then until God comes along and breathes the soul into him, and that's what makes him alive. That's what makes him valuable. That's what gives him an inherent worth and inherent dignity. So from that point of view, what science does and modernity does, and perhaps what Buddhism does, is it comes along and takes the soul away, yeah? Takes that spark of God away and says, actually, Adam really is just a lump of clay, and that's all we are. We're just complicated clay, yeah? There's no more meaning to it than that. We're just evolved bits of mud and slime. You're a bit more organized and so on, but basically, that's what we are. And so then, you know, then if that's where we get our sense of meaning from, then, well, the world would seem empty, wouldn't it? Yeah? It would seem hollow, would seem false. So I think within the theistic religions, and, you know, speaking for myself as a former Catholic, that there is that sort of sense of fear, that sort of sense of nervousness and fear around their beliefs, because there's, you know, if you look in the history of Hebraic religions, not just in modern times, but all through the Old Testament, it's constantly going on about how the Hebrews didn't have faith, yeah, about how they were being exhorted to faith and being encouraged to faith, and of course some of them would have faith, but most of the time, most of them were always falling away from the faith. That's the big story of the Old Testament, basically, is about how the old Hebrews, you know, kept on going and worshipping these other gods or didn't keep up the rites and so on, and so God got angry with them and all of these things. And so there's this, it's obviously very difficult, in some sense, to sustain this faith, yeah, in this belief system. And of course, from a Buddhist point of view, we'd say that, well, of course, the reason why it's difficult to sustain the faith is because there actually isn't a God, right? Well, it's not something that we can see or hear or smell, yeah? Yeah? So we don't talk about faith when it comes to believing in this bell or believing in this table, yeah? Yeah? Because we have the evidence for it. It's right there. And the same thing from a Buddhist point of view, yeah? You don't have to have faith in the fact that, you know, the Four Noble Truths, yeah, well, there's suffering, yeah? Anyone care to disagree, yeah? Anyone care to submit another alternative hypothesis? Yeah, there is, yeah? And so faith is a very, very different kind of quality in Buddhism. So from a Buddhist point of view, we can see that this sort of need to fill, to almost like to fill up and to sort of pump up the world with these things is essentially a force of delusion. And it's not different in kind, and this is maybe a little bit harsh, but I think it's true, and I'm just being honest here. I don't think it's any different in kind than believing in the tooth fairy or believing in Father Christmas or something like that. Yeah? And of course, for a little kid, believing in Father Christmas is important and lovely and makes the world a brighter, more fun, more magical place. Yeah. And what does it feel like when a kid finds out that there really isn't Father Christmas? Yeah. Do they feel empty? Yeah. Do they feel sad? Do they feel like the world's just become a bit less exciting or whatever? Well, I'm sure that they do. Yeah. But if we were to ask for ourselves, would I rather be like that? Yeah. Would I rather actually never have found out that Father Christmas isn't real? Yeah. And of course, as soon as you ask the question, it's ridiculous. Of course, that's part of growing up. Yeah, that's part of who we are. The reality, the taste of reality, has its own flavour. Yeah, and it's something which, even though there may be less magic in it, but there's something about it which is very satisfying. So yeah, I'm happy I don't believe in Father Christmas. and Tooth Fairy and God and all of these kinds of things. So if we come at from the Buddhist point of view, we don't start with belief, but we start with experience. Yeah? So what's the actual reality of our lives? And one of the curious things about experience is that it's very full. Right? Experience fills up everything because it is everything. Yeah? So that's what the Buddha said, the six senses are the all. Yeah? Everything is experience, everything is what is actually happening. So Buddhism is always pointing us back towards this experience. It's pointing us back towards what is real. And as we do that, our beliefs or our ideas or our dependence in many ways on these kind of external projections, external ideas of God and the soul and so on, they gradually drop away. They become irrelevant. We don't need them anymore. And as we grow in our maturity and our understanding of this, we begin to realize that it's not a smaller or a worse world. And think about the kid who just discovers that Father Christmas doesn't really come down the chimney and deliver the Christmas presents. What actually happens? Well, of course, what actually happens is that Mum and Dad bring the Christmas presents. Yeah, yeah. And isn't that very beautiful? Isn't that actually a beautiful world to be in, where your mum and dad love you so much that they will go to all of that trouble to get you the presents and bring them to you, yeah, and create that magic? Yeah, it's not like you haven't moved into a terrible, bad world. You've moved into a world of actual reality. You've moved into a world where the child realizes that this happiness comes from a real love of real parents, which is something that you can enter into in an actual relationship. Yeah, in a meaningful relationship. So in theistic religions, people always talk about having a relationship with God. But what kind of relationship can you have with God? I mean, again, really? Yeah? Who's God? What does he think? What does he watch on Sunday night on telly? What flavored milkshake does he like? Yeah? Who knows what God is, yeah? Is it actually is this kind of great unknown? And so it's the ability to enter into a relationship with that, again, is something which obviously is a reality for people. I'm not trying to say it's not a reality. I'm not saying that the reality is kind of wrong or anything like that. I'm just trying to say, well, what is the basis for it? So when our magic, in a sense, goes away from the world, and we get more grounded in the actual truth of things, then it's almost like this kind of paradox that the world actually becomes more and more wonderful. There's a great saying Douglas Adams used to say that Douglas Adams, who wrote The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He was a renowned atheist, but he said that isn't a garden beautiful enough without having to imagine fairies in it? Yeah? Yeah? So this is the kind of thing that I'm trying to get to, is actually, if you look at the flowers and the grass and the shrubs, every single one of those little things is incredibly beautiful in and of itself. Yeah, you can actually just look at one flower and all of the details, all the symmetry and the colours and the forms and the functions, the way everything's put together, and there's so much just in that. Yeah, and so if we're imagining that a garden is only amazing because of the fairies in the garden, well, we're actually not looking at the reality anymore. So, and I know a theistic response to that would be to say that that they would find an experience of God in the very beauty of the flowers and the world and so on. So that's, I think that's fair enough as a response. So when we come from a Buddhist point of view, we would, when we look into experience, gradually things drop away. Yeah? Not just abstract things like a belief in God or a belief in the soul. Yeah? This is what I was trying to lead to a little bit in the guided meditation earlier, dropping away, the past and the future drop away. The external world drops away. Even inside, the internal things, the thoughts drop away, the emotions drop away, the responses, the reactions, all of those familiar things drop away, and you're just there, and there's just nothing. And it's quite a fascinating thing, actually, if you just sit there, just for one moment, with a quiet mind, nothing happening, no thoughts. Who is that? Right? How do you know that that's me? Yeah, in that moment of awareness, there's no preferences, there's no personality, there's no ideas, there's none of the things, there's no history, yeah? There's no plans, there's none of the things that I use to define and identify myself. Yeah, if you say who are you and what are you? Well, I'm a monk, I'm this many years old, I do this and I do that and so on and so forth. All of those things we use to define ourselves, none of them actually exist in that moment of experience. They are all completely absent. Everything that we use to define ourselves is gone. And that's why it's so peaceful, isn't it? Yeah? So if you say, again, from the point of view of an idea, and you say, all of those things are gone, your thoughts are gone, your views are gone, your ideas are gone, you think, oh my goodness, yeah, who am I, everything I've worked so hard, all my knowledge, my learning, everything I've worked so hard to build up in my life, it's all gone, my relationships, my friends, my skills, none of them exist, just a moment of awareness. So it's actually quite terrifying, quite scary. But the experience itself doesn't feel like the experience of absence, right? It's not like a kind of gnawing empty stomach, yeah, where you feel I have to fill this with things. Yeah, it's not a vacuum in that sense. It just doesn't demand to be filled. And this is a paradoxical thing about the mind. The more that you empty it, the more you realize the mind is actually completely, totally content to be emptied. It feels completely full. So from a point of view of an idea or a theory about these things, it's a paradox to say that it's in emptiness that we find fulfillment. Right? It sounds like a paradox, but in experience, it's completely normal, it feels completely natural. And it feels almost as if that things, the intrusion of things in experience, by things I mean sounds, sights, various objects of consciousness, the intrusion of things in experience is breaking up our consciousness. It breaks up. It turns things into parts. It divides things. It separates them. It lessens them. It diminishes. The more things we have happening in our mind, the more our mind is moving, the more ideas, the more thoughts, the more memories, the more our mind is broken and fragmented, and the more it shrinks and it diminishes. And I think the end result of that process, if we don't have any control over it, then the end result of that process is madness. Yeah, our mind becomes completely dissociated. Bits of our mind go off in totally different directions and don't talk to each other at all. We've got no idea what the different parts of our mind are doing. Yeah? This is the various kinds of madness that we can descend into. And what stops that fragmentation and disintegration is that sense of unity. And that sense of unity ultimately is grounded on that very fundamental sense of a unified awareness, or a center of awareness, center of knowing. So again, this is something that's very obvious to any meditator. You sit down, and as you sit down, there's close your eyes, start to meditate, and there's a feeling, there's an impression that somehow our awareness is centered in here. The subject is in here somewhere, and what happens is out there. And the more we meditate, the deeper we go into the meditation, the more we become aware of that subject, the more we become aware of that thing in here, whatever it is. I'm not worried about what it is at the moment, but just that it is. We feel that's kind of subject, and that we realize that's very much the center around which the world revolves. Or at least our world revolves. So in practice, the more we let go of the things, the more full we become, the more complete our mind becomes. Now, one of the problems that there is in Buddhism, I think, is that even though these things are very true and very beautiful, I think that they are sometimes mistaken by practitioners who err on the side of nihilism. And sometimes people are attracted to Buddhism because of that very nihilistic quality. So in a sense, if you find the nihilistic, if you find that this way of thinking about Buddhism to be nihilistic, then it's probably the right medicine for you, right? If you're a bit scared by it, then it's probably a sign that you need to be doing it, yeah, and experiencing it. On the other hand, if you think, destroy. Get rid of. Fantastic. Yeah, world's a load of rubbish. Get rid of samsara. Then, and if you really kind of identify with these nihilistic teachings in Buddhism, then it probably is a sign that you've got the kind of strong nihilistic tendency, and that these kinds of teachings are probably not for you. Yeah, but they're probably the ones that you're going to get most attracted to. So somebody like that probably does need to do more thin meditation rather than nothing meditation. So by thin meditation, I mean things like, say, metta or something like that, where you're actually positively developing a particular emotional quality rather than looking too much at the side of emptiness. But that's a mistake, not a problem with Buddhism as such, but just a problem with how it can be applied sometimes in the wrong way for somebody who has a wrong character or wrong developmental stage. So when Buddhism came to the West, and the early Western interpreters of Buddhism, of course, had no experience of meditation, no idea of what these things were being talked about. And they sort of concluded that Buddhism was a very pessimistic religion, and they sort of started with Arthur Schopenhauer, and there's a long history of treating Buddhism as quite negative and nihilistic. So I think it's not something which is so much kind of amenable to discussion. It's not something that's going to be solved through philosophy, but something which really is depends on our experience. So I think this is something which is a test for the quality of our meditation, the quality of our mindfulness, which is do we actually experience that sense of fullness? When we meditate, when things drop away, when the awareness becomes clear, when there's nothing there, What is that like? And of course, that can be different for different people. Of course, it's very different for different people. Some people, it does feel empty. It feels barren. It feels like there's nothing there. And some people, it is just kind of there's no heart in the meditation. There's no joy. Or they just get bored. So in a sense, that's a kind of a wrong emptiness if you're feeling like that. So that's something that needs to be investigated. If you're having those kinds of experiences in meditation, then you need to be looking at developing the more positive qualities, developing the metta, compassion, to the devotional side of things. So developing that positive emotion. A real emptiness, a healthy emptiness. It's very content and very full. So this is where you get beyond that, the positive thinking thing of is the glass half full or half empty, yeah. So that's a kind of pop Buddhist psychology, which is like, you know, very early kind of stage of developing. But if your meditation is going very well, then the emptier the glass becomes, the more full it is. Yeah, and the completely empty glass is really completely full. So of course, until we reach the end of the path, until we realize Nibbana itself, then what we see as emptiness will always have something to it. Emptiness is always relative. So we let go of one thing, and there's a sense of release, a sense of comfort and ease that comes from letting go. And we're very content with that, and as we stay with that for longer, we gradually realize that there's still something else there. There's still something present. And so we gradually learn to let go of that, come to another level of emptiness. And that keeps on going on and on and on and on. In a sutta like the Chula Sunyata Sutta, it gives a number of different levels of emptiness. It goes through different meditation stages. But that's just a few examples. Actually, in meditation, there's countless levels of letting go, levels of different kinds of emptiness. And each level that you go to, the more that you let go of, the more peaceful it becomes, the more content, the more satisfied that one becomes. And so when we hear in Buddhism that Nibbana is the highest form of emptiness, that's what it means. That's all it means. It's just that if you continue that process of greater and greater contentment, greater and greater happiness, greater and greater letting go, that it has a completion. It does have a perfection, right? It doesn't just keep going forever. There is an end to that, and there is a perfect letting go and a perfect emptiness, which we call Nibbana. And with that comes a sense of perfect fullness and perfect contentment. So this is my little talk for you this evening on fullness and emptiness. I offer that for your reflection. And so let's finish my thing.
Bhagavata Namo Dhamma Namasani Supadipanno Bhagavata